such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Everybody, welcome. I am Father Anthony, and I'm your brother, and I share with you the distress, the kingdom, and the endurance we have in Christ Jesus. On this, the church is celebrating the feast of the Holy Name of Mary today, the memorial or the feast. We call it a feast. So we always keep our Lady ever close to ourselves, very much in our hearts, and it's through her that we have the easiest access to Jesus, and then through Jesus and Jesus, and through Jesus to the Father. So we're happy to be here today. This is a as we prepare for the weekend, thank God it's Friday. I'm a little bit different today. We don't have Christina. We don't have Tony. Christina's in the studio running around, and Nick is here, of course, a faithful one. And
I'm here.
You made it in okay, I guess, today, huh?
It's just that the rain makes, you know, like snow makes it rough to drive in because everybody drives carefully, and it gets like, you know, traffic is a little bad out there. But I made it in all right.
Well, I tell you, you must be feeling very much kind of in the Halloween mode, right? This is a he's got the
absolutely exactly. Right. I got my pumpkin head on, and I'm getting a early start on things.
I mean, with the weather like it is, this is kind of unseasonably cold, I think. You know,
here. But it's perfect.
It's nice. It's nice.
I was telling my friends, I get an early start on.
Yeah, you better believe it. So, anyway, and we're preparing for the feast of the Exaltation of the Cross on Sunday. So that's really our victory that we have. The humility and the gratitude and the courage to see always beyond the cross and of the glory and the light of the resurrection. So anyway, I'm not going to waste any time because today we've got some guests, Jude Hunts, mm-hmm. right? From the he's a director of the Office for Peace and Justice, and Brother Graham Golden. That's kind of a nice name, Graham Golden, huh? Mm-hmm. Now, is Graham your religious name or is that your baptismal
name? That's my baptismal name.
It is your baptismal name, mm-hmm. Okay. So Brother Graham is a Norbertine, and you're in Chicago as a student working at the Office for Peace and Justice, or what's the connection here?
I'm in Chicago as a student, and I'm doing some work with the Office of Peace and Justice here, and building on experience that I had back home in New Mexico in the Archdiocese of Santa Fe Office of Peace and Justice.
Fantastic. Are you new here, or have you been here for a while already?
I've been in Chicago for several years now.
Oh, okay. All right. Where do you study?
Currently at Catholic Theological Union.
Okay, sure.
But I just finished a program at the University of Chicago in Social Service Administration
as
well.
Okay, fantastic. So. Okay, great. Anyway, so Jude, welcome. You were here the other day. You weren't on the radio. Ashley was with us a couple of weeks ago.
Right, Ashley was with you. I had another engagement at the time, but he came with Father Keiko to talk about the plight of the people in Iraq, and that was a wonderful show. I got to hear it afterwards, and it was great.
Yeah, no, it was nice having him here, and then the mass, the service, the liturgy, it was beautiful.
And the mass afterwards was unbelievable to have, you know, to hear the Our Father in the words of institution and the words that Jesus actually used in Aramaic was
powerful.
I don't think I'll ever forget that. Yeah,
I tell you, when we experience something like that, I mean, of course, the mass is the mass, right?
Right.
The sacred mysteries are the sacred mysteries, but. But as you said, to hear it in the language, and in the choir, they had that beautiful
heavenly choir.
So everything was sung in Aramaic, and I remember even, it, and the church was packed.
It was packed.
And the sense of the sacred, you know, from the beginning to the end, it was amazing. There are these moments, these they're almost like little epiphanies, aren't they? Yeah. Where you just feel this this powerful manifestation of God, and everybody is just basically humbled. I mean, there were a lot of people in tears as well.
I was one of them. I have to say, it reminded me. I took a pilgrimage last year to the Holy Land, and I was able to experience some of that there, and it transported me back to that.
Yeah.
I was privileged to be in Jerusalem when the Holy Father was elected last year, and when he was elected, all of the bells around the city of Jerusalem rang, and it was a very powerful experience. People flocked to the churches, and the monks had the prayer services of Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And it was yeah.
Yeah, I've been there probably about 5 times.
Okay.
I was there with Pope John Paul II.
Oh wow!
In the year 2000.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It was a powerful experience, and when he went to the Holocaust museum there, the guide, we had an Israeli guide, a woman. Christina, you weren't on that trip. You were on a different trip with us. That wasn't not in 2000, but it brought tears to their eyes. I mean, just the presence of the Holy Father and his when he went to the Wailing Wall and all that. And
yes.
Anyway, it was a beautiful experience. Tony, welcome. You're kind of flying like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, get caught in traffic.
So
hello, everyone.
Jude and brother Graham, you probably heard it on the radio coming
in,
right?
Yes, I did.
So
he's really
always glued to the radio. So anyway. No, Jude, we're happy to have you here. A little bit now, your name. I wanted to ask you that, or did I ask you when I? Your name comes from where? How did you get the name Jude?
Jude. Well, I tell people this is the name you get when you're born in 1970 to an Italian and a Catholic who was also a Beatles fan.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking. That makes sense. Sure.
So hey, there were multiple motives for the name that I have.
And it has nothing, no reference or no relation to Judas Iscariot.
No, not at all. No.
Anyway,
I have my statue of Saint Jude on my desk in the office, and I have one in my home, and
So anyway,
so my goal is to have a second Saint Jude someday.
There you go. So you're on the way.
Right now, there's only one. There's lots of Saint Peters and there's lots of Saint Johns, but there's only one Saint Jude.
You're on the way.
I'm working to change that.
Let me ask you this question. So you're the director of the Office for Peace and Justice here in the Archdiocese of Chicago. So can you give us a little bit of your background, like what brought you into this? This apostolic work, it's really the mission.
Yeah, I moved here a month ago from Kansas City, Missouri, where I did the same work in the Diocese of Kansas City, St. Joseph. I did that for 4 years for the diocese there. And then the last 2 years, I was the chancellor of the diocese.
Oh, really?
I was asked to do that, to undertake some projects that needed to happen, and I had some experience in, and I got those projects completed and done, and I said to the bishop, I said, I've done what you asked me. I don't believe I have a mission to be a chancellor forever. I kind of want to go back to the work that I did before. That wasn't possible in Kansas City, but he allowed me to look around for other places to pursue that work, and here I am in Chicago.
So how did you, first of all, a chancellor is kind of, if I'm not too keen on, but he's kind of like the right arm to the bishop or the cardinal, huh?
My predecessor in Kansas City in the job defined it as being the first doormat the bishop wipes his feet on when he walks in the morning, and that wasn't too far from the truth, but officially, in canon law, the job of the chancellor is the official record keeper and the notary public for all official church records and documents. And so that was the main job. And then I oversaw a number of offices and special projects and whatnot. In fact, the job of chancellor is the only one in canon law where it almost literally says, and other duties as assigned by the bishop. And so there was a lot of that. And it was good work, and it was very important work. But my heart was in the work of the social mission of the church, and the bishop knew and understood that, and so was gracious enough to allow me the opportunity to look around, but I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, Sorry about last Sunday, Chicago, but I was just surprised as you were. Yeah. So with the Bills beating the Bears, but so I'm halfway between where I was in Kansas City and where I came from. So
Peace and Justice, specifically. Well, maybe you want to say something about what that office does and what draws you to that work.
Yeah, so the Office of Peace and Justice, this was one of the first ones started in the United States, is to undertake the social mission of the church, to explain and defend the social doctrine, as the church calls it in her official law documents, what the church teaches and proclaims, and also to put into concrete reality and expression with regard to different project. So the two largest things we oversee is the Catholic Relief Services work, the work of the church overseas. Right now we just did an emergency appeal for the relief of Christians in Iraq and Syria and Gaza. And so that's a big part of the job. And then the other component is the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, which is a collection that the church takes every November. It's a collection that started here in Chicago, actually. It was originally an archdiocesan collection that the archdiocese gave as grants to do the work of justice and charity throughout the archdiocese. And then the bishops saw that as a model, and it became a national collection. And so every diocese has it and undertakes these grants to aid in the work of justice and charity in each diocese.
So and that's basically where we've invited you in to speak specifically about that, the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, which is the national, I guess they call it anti-poverty or social justice program for the USCCB.
Right.
Is the headquarters right here in Chicago?
Well, the national headquarters are in Washington, D.C. at the USCCB offices, and then each diocese is its own regional location. So each diocese has a Peace and Justice office, and so their job is to oversee the collection and to make sure the grants are being used correctly and according to the mind of the church.
Fantastic. Before we talk specifically about that, because I know there's a lot that you want to say about that, I wanted to ask, so Brother Graham, you're a student and an intern here in Chicago, so can you a little bit of your background as well?
Well, I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is where my home abbey is, the Abbey of Santa Maria de la Vid. So we're one of the youngest Norbertine communities in the United States.
A Norbertine?
Where you can think of, we're canons regular. So you can think of us as kind of half monk, half friar. Okay. You know, we live in permanent large communities, publicly pray the liturgy of the hours together, but also engage in apostolic ministry outside the monastery itself. And so we have four abbeys here in the United States. We're one of the oldest orders in the church, founded in 1120, but also one of the smaller ones at this point in history. So.
But it's all over the world.
We're a worldwide order.
Mm-hmm. Founded in...
Outside Lyon, France, in the Valley of Premontre.
Okay, sure. So your specific focus of study right now is in the area of social justice? Or?
Well, currently I'm completing a Master's in Divinity with a focus in intercultural ministries. But my ministry experience leading up to this point and education has focused on issues of social justice, social welfare, how the church engages political context and things like that. So that's what I studied at the University of Chicago previously to now.
Okay, very good. And you're working with the Office for Peace and Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So Jude, a little bit about, again, maybe the foundation, the beginnings of how this all came to be, the Catholic Campaign for Human Development.
So here in Chicago, there was, obviously Chicago has always had and continues to have great challenges with regard to poverty. And so the Archdiocese back in the 60s was looking for ways to be more engaged in the work of charity and justice throughout the Archdiocese. And so they had this idea of having an archdiocesan collection, which they would then turn around to give in the form of grants to help different groups throughout the Archdiocese to work on anti-poverty campaigns to help lift people up. So instead of, you know, there's sort of two feats here. You have charity, which is emergency assistance, which is, you know, helping somebody with the rent or with groceries or things like that. But what CCHG wanted to do was to get people out of that, to lift themselves up, to enable themselves to get out of poverty. And so they focused largely on employment, trying to find suitable employment for people so that they don't have to live in poverty. They can raise their families with a certain amount of economic security. Also looking for people who are who may be unjustly treated. For example, we have a group that we give to here in Chicago whose sole job is to work for those who are handicapped to help them find employment. You know, sometimes those groups are discriminated against, even though they're perfectly able to do work. And so the handicapped community needed to organize to help one another find employment, to help one another advocate for each other, so that they can be independent and not be dependent on others, because they want to be independent.
Sure.
And so that's what the job of CCHG is to do, is to help people be independent so that they're not dependent upon assistance and the government or whatever it is for their livelihood. And there's great success stories to be had about that.
How do you flesh that? I mean, how does that actually done?
So the collection is taken every year, and we have a pot of money that.
It's one thing to help.
Doing the work
exactly.
Itself.
The work, yeah.
Well, you know, each of these things, you know, sort of takes on a life of its own. For example, one of our. One of the organizations we fund is at St. Pius V here in Chicago, and they work with women who are victims of domestic violence, which has been something in the news here with the NFL's latest scandal in terms of domestic abuse. You know, it could be because the women are in abusive relationships. They're and they need to get out of those relationships. They need to, and a lot of them don't work because they were dependent upon that abusive partner to support them. So they come to St. Pius V for counseling in terms of overcoming the trauma of the abuse, as well as job placement, job assistance, connecting them to job training, so that they can find a job and support themselves, and sometimes they have to support the children as well.
I understand for myself. I guess for all of us. But so the campaign.
Yeah.
Well, the campaign's a campaign.
Yeah.
So the Catholic Campaign for Human Development is basically just getting the funds or the resources.
Yeah. So
needed
we're not necessarily here to start different projects.
Although sometimes
we do that. Yeah. For example, we happen to be working on a project here in Chicago, and I'm going to have a meeting on Monday to start a Catholic credit union. This was something I did in Kansas City. Lots of low-income folks wind up victims of the payday lending industry and the check cashing places and things like that, and you get into a cycle of really bad debt that they can't get out of. And so in Kansas City, we had a Catholic credit union that was a small little place that... its main focus was to provide financial services for low-income folks. So all of their products, they had a small dollar loan program that was at a just interest rate that wasn't usurious. They had financial education in English, Spanish, and Vietnamese. They were able to provide car loans and home loans at affordable rates and at amounts that you couldn't get at a traditional bank. For example, if you wanted to get a $50,000 mortgage at a bank, you can't get that at a bank, but you could at a credit union. And that became a vehicle for really transforming neighborhoods. that were typically run down. Low-income folks could buy them very inexpensively and use the rest of the money to fix the house up. And you improve a neighborhood that way.
Sure.
So the Catholic Credit Union in Kansas City really took off. We went from one branch to five branches. We did that through CCHD. We're bringing in 50 new clients every month, new accounts. And the other thing about the Catholic Credit Union was, something that a lot of other Catholics found very troubling. The big bank, what are they doing with their money? Are they giving their money to Planned Parenthood? Are they giving their money to other causes that go against the teachings of the church? Well, the Catholic Credit Union is like the Bailey Savings and Loan, from It's a Wonderful Life. All the money stays there. It's there to help the members. It's not going to be used for our purposes, contrary to what we believe as Catholics. Sure. It's a way of putting our values in the marketplace, as opposed to just talking about them.
Sure.
And so that was a great project we did with CCHD in Kansas City, and it's one we want to bring to Chicago. Lots of places are asking for it. They don't know how to help their folks who are getting caught in debt cycles. And so that's a project that we want to help but create here in Chicago.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. When we come back, okay. We want to talk about the campaign, certainly. Yeah. And I'd like to get a sense also, I'm always curious. I think people are curious as well. You're working in one of the major offices of the Archdiocese and the Peace and Justice, and this is I wasn't aware of the fact that the Catholic campaign actually started here for human development, started here in Chicago.
Okay.
But what in your heart puts you, what brings you into this? I guess it has much to do with, spirituality and faith and all that.
Absolutely,
okay? Because I think it's, and then a little bit about, there was a controversy a couple of years ago, and so, it keeps coming up.
Absolutely,
every time we come close to the campaign, maybe you can clarify
something. Absolutely,
some of
that happy to do that, sure.
Okay, very good. All right, everybody, we'll be right back on Father Anthony. We're here with Jude Hunts. I want to say
Hunts. Hunts, the other catch-up. That's right.
That's it. That's what's confusing me, I think. And Brother Graham Golden from the Office for Peace and Justice of the Archdiocese. We'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to listeners, supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
It's time to bend some spaghetti around the tines of your fork, because it's time once again for St. Stanislaus Kostka's annual spaghetti dinner this Sunday, September 14th from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. There'll be spaghetti with meatballs or spaghetti with plain sauce, tossed salad, Italian bread and butter, coffee and juice, and assorted pastries, and games for adults including raffles, prizes, 50-50 cash, and pot of gold. Oh, and did I mention there'll be live music too? Tickets are only $9 for adults, $5 for children ages 10 and under. You can get tickets at the parish office or at the door. That's the St. Stanislaus Kostka annual spaghetti dinner this Sunday, September 14th, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka School in the school cafeteria at 1255 North Noble Street, Chicago. Bring an appetite, bring a friend. This Sunday, September 14th, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. The Pro-Life Action League and Winds of Change would like you to know that this Saturday, September 13th, is the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children. You are invited to visit the gravesites of aborted children at three locations across Chicagoland this Saturday, September 13th. Cardinal George will speak at all three gravesites. For information and further details, visit prolifeaction.org. That's prolifeaction.org. And remember, these innocents.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for being with us on this Friday TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. We're going into the weekend. It seems like weeks go fast.
It goes so fast.
I can't believe we're in the middle of September already. This is unbelievable, although it feels like we're in the middle of October. But it looks like it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at one point this morning, I thought, could it possibly snow? that's an exaggeration, but it just had that look,
Yeah.
Anyway, we're really happy today to have Jude Hunts and Brother Graham Golden with us. They're from the Office of the Archdiocesan Office for Peace and Justice, Archdiocese of Chicago, and I've invited them in to speak about the upcoming campaign, which is just right around the corner, too, isn't it? Because that's...
It's a weekend before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So
yeah.
The Catholic Campaign for Human Development. Yeah. You know, before we went on the break, I mentioned that every time we come close to the campaign, there's, you know, every so often, you get some resistance on the mm-hmm. part of people about the campaign and where the money's
going right.
and mm-hmm. all that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I'd be happy to mm-hmm. talk about that. There was, I think, it was 2009, 2010,
yeah,
about where
ago.
There was a review and renewal process that was spurred by kind of growing controversies around the campaign. And there was concern that some of the funding was going to groups that were, while they were doing organizing in their communities around issues of poverty, were also forming coalitions and things with other groups that were advocating for things contrary to Catholic values and contrary to our stance on life issues and on marriage and family right. issues and things mm-hmm. like that. And so taking a critical look at that, the Bishops' Conference underwent a very extensive review process of the campaign itself, seeing where the funding were going, what funding groups were doing, and how we could more closely monitor and ensure that the funding was being used for the mission of the campaign, which was primarily to address root causes of poverty and help individuals
right.
Break the cycle of poverty, as Jude had spoken to. And so in that context, several things were discovered. One was that the lack of compliance was a very small percentage of groups overall. But it was enough to cause concern and controversy
sure,
amongst
sure.
the faithful. And so in that review process, the grants became much clearer in their sense of mission to organizations as far as of the need to comply with and conform to Catholic values in a kind of collective moral and ethical stance around a whole area of issues. And that, I think, having worked in an office that oversaw a number of CCHD grants at the time, was, I think, a very healthy thing for the campaign. It was a very healthy thing for our office. And I think it was beneficial to the groups we were working with because it helped assert a stronger Catholic identity and value set. It helped those groups understand really how they were participating in the mission of the church, because many of the groups are Catholic that are funded, but many aren't, but they're
sure.
Participating in the same issues that we're concerned with when it comes to you know, aspects impacting
sure.
our society. And so and we had in that office even some groups that outsiders thought were maybe potentially, you know, straying from these parameters, and the very clear review process that was placed by the Bishops' Conference allowed us to you know, systematically see how these groups were engaging a variety of issues. And more often than not, like anything, it's very easy to kind of take a surface level glance at something
sure, sure.
and see a connection that maybe
yeah.
isn't really there.
Exactly, yeah.
Especially given how complex a lot of the social issues
right.
the campaign's dealing with, especially
right.
around issues of immigration and employment,
exactly, yeah.
domestic violence. And so it's very easy to see relationships that on the surface appear to have certain connections
sure.
That mm-hmm. really don't. And so the need to follow money, follow activities, have meetings with these organizations.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I saw it as almost a form of evangelization to help them understand really the depth and breadth of our Catholic social doctrine
yeah.
and how coherent and cohesive a Catholic worldview
mm-hmm.
is, and in many ways different and prophetic from what they were encountering
sure.
in mainstream political
right.
systems, and encouraging them to say, you know, the church is willing to stand with you if you're willing to not have to step into these areas that you may
right.
not want to,
sure.
but feel compelled
mm-hmm.
to out of a need to form coalitions with certain groups or find other funding streams. Because as much as we have restrictions, other groups that are funding
sure,
these
sure.
groups
yeah.
have their own restrictions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so.
And, you know, we, throughout the country, we've been in the process of having to say to groups, look, we can no longer fund you. When I was in Kansas City, we had a group that we had funded. It had originally started out, it was a group started by a Catholic priest 40 years ago. He passed on and moved into lay leadership. We had funded it for a long time because it was it had roots in the Catholic community. But they decided that they wanted to give an award to Kathleen Sebelius. And I said, no, you can't do that. And they said, well, we're going to do that. And I said, okay, well, then we're not going to fund you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to have those hard conversations. Sure, sure. You know, last fall, we had that unfortunate conversation with another group that decided to take a stance on marriage that was contrary to the churches. Right. And we had to say, I'm sorry, but you can't receive our money anymore. Even though they were doing great work on an issue that we care about, you know, when it comes to immigration, you know, we couldn't. Right. And so those conversations do happen, and those defunding processes take place. What it comes down to is it really comes down to vigilance. During the renewal process, you know, I was in Kansas City at the time, and I had decided as part of our local review of things, even though we were being very diligent, I asked the Respect Life Office in our diocese to act as another filter. So when we got the grant applications, we did our committee review, and then I asked the Respect Life Office, let us know if you know anything about any of these groups that may be problematic, and they would. And I know that we did that here in Chicago, too, that the Respect Life Office is very closely working with our office to help us monitor these things because, you know, the more eyes on something, the better. It's like I used to be a school teacher. So, you know, it's nice when one teacher is watching the recess field, but it's better if you have three or four.
Sure, sure.
Because you can catch more things. And so that's what we've done in Chicago. That's what we did in Kansas City. I know they did that in Albuquerque. So it was a wake-up call to local dioceses that, you know, like our brother Graham had mentioned, you know, you just kind of, you know, you just get into a habit of not looking carefully because you've had these long relationships and you're not watching to see if groups have started to you know, stray a little bit.
Sure.
And so so I think in every generation, the church is always reminded in some way of having to be vigilant. That's, I think, was one of the lessons of the sexual abuse crisis,
sure.
Wasn't it?
That, sure, yeah.
You know, the church had to renew its commitment to protecting children. And so, you know, we don't like for things like that to happen, but God sends them to remind us that we have to be faithful and vigilant at all times.
Yeah, you know, so. It's interesting because I, and this is why I kind of asked that you address this and also, you know, bring in the spiritual element of this as well because I, you know, I come out of the 70s and I was ordained a priest in 1984.
Okay.
It's funny, I just spoke to a priest the other day who was here for a baptism and he was ordained, I think, the year before or the year after myself. He said, we're still trying to work through some of the stuff of those that era, you know. And of course, in that at that time, everything was, you know, peace and justice.
Right.
And to the point that many would, and I mean, in reality, this was something we experienced.
Right.
So that, you know, it was so, the emphasis was so much on justice, peace and justice,
right,
that people would justify, you know,
just about anything, right?
Just about anything.
Yeah,
well, you know,
right.
The other thing is like when Pope Francis said a couple of years ago, soon after he was raised to the chair, Peter, he said, you know, we got to get out of the church, you know, open those doors and get out.
Right.
And there was this fear all of a sudden on the part of some. I understand what he was what he's saying, you know,
sure.
But on the I know that this is my way to get out.
Right.
The radio is one of the means by which
yes.
we can move beyond the doors of the church. The doors are open.
Yes.
But I also know that my ministry is so all consuming
mm-hmm.
that I can't possibly.
Right.
So there's this a little bit of a fright, you know, going back to the time when literally people left.
Yes.
The schools and the parishes, you know, the priests and the nuns and well, thank God we've. Where I hope more, you know, the laity are very
yes.
much involved in the mission of the church. But the point, I guess, the point that I'm making is there's almost, it seems to me, almost a reluctance on the part of some when it
mm-hmm.
comes to when you hear peace and justice,
right?
That you know it's Well, I'll give you a very brief example as well. When I first came to St. Stan's, and this is going back, 24 years, we were in a community that was very, very poor.
Yeah.
We had a lot of gang activity, very, very
right.
poor. It was predominantly Hispanic, Latino.
Yeah.
And of course, this was a time, a few years after I got here, that the property taxes were beginning to, the gentrification
right.
was happening. And so people were being basically priced out, forced out of the mm-hmm. community. And so we were part of we became part of a group that wanted to see what we could do to help
right.
keep those property taxes down and
right.
Very much engaged, involved with the life of the people.
Yeah.
And at that time, too, the Archdiocese was under Cardinal Bernardine. Mm-hmm. We did this, we were part of a social, it was under the umbrella of social justice,
yeah.
but community organizing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
And I was very much a part of that. Until I went to a retreat, and of course, this was not only Catholics, but
right.
others as well. And in this weekend retreat, this is after being with them and this group. I don't remember even mm-hmm. the name of the group, but it became apparent to me that in some ways we felt like we were being used, that they didn't
yes.
really espouse or really appreciate or respect really who we are and what
yes.
we were all about. And so at that point I had to
yeah.
step aside.
And I agree with that, and I had those experiences too. And one of the things we've done in Chicago is we've started something under our office called Organizing Catholics for Justice. The idea behind that is that, you know, we're not going to, you know, I think we sort of got into a problem where we just sort of gave that over to other groups.
Yeah.
Where we would give money and say, okay, you take care of the organizing, you
sure.
know. But no, if we're not in the driver's seat, then we're going to be co-opted.
Exactly. That's
and
point.
So
yeah.
so we started this group called Organizing Catholics for Justice, which it is a branch of our office that will do the organizing according to Catholic social teaching, that we're going to follow Catholic principles, that we're not going to let somebody else do it for us, that we're going to do this in relationship within the church. And so, and I think the other danger that we got into was on the spirituality side. You know, when you get involved in activism, whether it's social justice or pro-life or whatnot, you can get into an activist mentality.
Sure.
And if it's not rooted in a prayer life and a spirituality, then it'll go off the rails. It just
right.
will. So for me, the model for social justice has always been Mary, ironically enough.
Sure.
I think in a way we're all called to be Mary in that we have received the Word of God and we have to give birth to that
right.
Word of God in our lives. And we do that by doing what Mary did. She pondered and treasured all these things in her heart, and then she gave birth to the Word made flesh. You know, God is not an abstract principle in
right.
in our theology. God is a concrete reality who came among us and lived among us. And that's something that we have to appropriate in our own lives, not just in the life of charity that Jesus had lived, but also in the work of justice that he called for as well. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. For the, you know, we tend to forget that, you know, when God gave the law to Israel, it wasn't just an individual law. It was a law that the community had to live out as well, that there was this command to care for the poor by the nation. You know, you had the Jubilee years and you had the Sabbath years
right.
and you had the requirements requiring the nation to allow the poor to glean crops so that nobody went hungry. To care for the resident alien as if he were your own, you know, as if he were an Israelite. So we have to remind ourselves of both charity and justice, that God calls us to be just in all of our dealings as individuals and as a community, as well as we have to be a people of charity. And so I think that's what we're all called to do, and to constantly reflect upon that, you know. To what is God calling us? How are we to give birth to the Word of God in our own lives? And that's, you know, that's a theological reflection. It's also a very spiritual one that we need to appropriate in our lives as individuals and as a community of faith.
Maybe we'll take a break when we come back. Maybe, yeah. And this is in along these lines, you know, this so often you hear today, and it seems like, you know, the church is being pushed to the fringes.
Yes.
Of society, or that
and the cardinal talked about that very recently. Yeah.
Well, maybe you can talk to us about that. You know,
that.
Because
yeah.
this idea that you know, we can do our work and proclaim the good news within the confines of our own institution or within our own churches and all that, right. And yet the very thing that Pope Francis has really emphasized, and certainly it comes right out of the gospel, and you've alluded right. to that fact, and that is that we're called out of ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're to go out. The faith is lived in the public square.
Right.
So maybe we'll come back and sure. if you wouldn't mind addressing that and
sure.
share a little bit of what the cardinal was saying, it would be a good thing. All right, everybody, thanks. I was going to say thanks. Thanks for being with us, but we're not going away. We're coming right back. I'm here with Jude Hunts and Brother Graham Green.
Graham Green.
It's Friday.
Can I get your autograph?
You know who he is?
Friday
yes,
feeling.
Yes, of course.
That's Friday brother, feeling for you, Father.
Brother Graham Golden.
Just think cereal.
There you go. I bet you get that a lot.
Golden, yes,
Graham.
I'm
sure. You know, I have resisted saying that.
Hey, listen, we'll be back. Don't go away. I'm Father Anthony. Listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change in AM 750 WNDC.
The Pro-Life Action League and Winds of Change would like you to know that this Saturday, September 13th, is the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children. You are invited to visit the gravesites of aborted children at 3 locations across Chicagoland this Saturday, September 13th. Cardinal George will speak at all 3 gravesites. For information and further details, visit prolifeaction.org. That's prolifeaction.org. And remember, these innocents. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. It's time to bend some spaghetti around the tines of your fork, because it's time once again for St. Stanislaus Kostka's annual spaghetti dinner this Sunday, September 14th from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. There'll be spaghetti with meatballs or spaghetti with plain sauce, tossed salad, Italian bread and butter, coffee and juice, and assorted pastries, and games for adults including raffles, prizes, 50-50 cash, and pot of gold. Oh, and did I mention there'll be live music too? Tickets are only $9 for adults, $5 for children ages 10 and under. You can get tickets at the parish office or at the door. That's the St. Stanislaus Kostka annual spaghetti dinner this Sunday, September 14th, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka School in the school cafeteria at 1255 North Noble Street, Chicago. Bring an appetite, bring a friend. This Sunday, September 14th, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. I feel like I'm just tripping over everybody's name here, and I've got a wedding right after the show. That's the
okay.
thing, you know, and so... yesterday, I actually even scheduled the two rehearsals at the same time. You know?
Wow.
So I had, after confessions, I had the rehearsals between the confessions and the Mass. And so I had mistakenly scheduled them at the same time. So they're, you know, everybody at the same time. I said, well, at least I didn't schedule the weddings at the same
right.
time. You know, that
we have
been...
a scheduled by location yeah. here at St. Stan's. Come to
that
see us.
That would
right?
be a disaster. But the one wedding is right after, so I think I've got my mind on that as well. So, but anyway, I'm
sure.
I apologize. So it's Brother Graham Golden mm-hmm. and Jude Hunts.
Yes.
Not Hines.
Right.
Hey, Jude.
Right.
And
Graham Green, although I would have been honored to have been.
yeah, that's right. But we hear from the Office of Peace and Justice. So we're talking about you were going to you say something about the cardinal. This has gotten a lot of press, and I was speaking about the church seemingly being pushed to the fringes mm-hmm. of society. Can you?
Yeah, the cardinal was remarking about secular religion, how it. Has become the official religion to which we must all adhere, and they have an orthodoxy that they want to enforce and regulate upon society, whether it's with regard to marriage or life issues or things like that. And if you don't go along, you're sort of marginalized. Certainly there's a lot to be said for that. But again, if we look at the you know, we go back to Mary again. You know, where was Mary forced to give birth to Jesus? On the margins. There was no place.
In the end.
In the end. There was no place in regular society. She had to go to a cave or a stable or a manger or however you envision that. But it was on the margins. It was outside. And that's where Jesus was brought forth into the world and inserted himself into society. You know, he was at the temple area all the time. He did not, you know, stay on the margins. Even though he was forced to be born on the margins, he inserted himself into society. But
and even crucified outside the
walls. Which is the way the prophets died. You know, you remember they were brought out to the city gates, and so there's that prophetic aspect of Jesus' death. You know, to go back to the spiritual element of this, you know, remember Jesus's regular practice was to be up on the mountain at night with God, but he didn't stay there. He came down to minister among the people in the towns and in the crowds and whatnot. And that has to be our model as well, that we have to have this intense prayer life that, nourishes us and sustains us and impels us, out into care for society.
It's kind of like the, just was it last week or 2 weeks ago, the prophet Jeremiah says, "You duped me, O Lord, right. I allowed myself to be duped." I mean, I sat alone under the weight of your hand in the midst of the merrymakers, and he becomes the, you know, the cause of, well, because he has to, you know, proclaim to the,
right.
Call the people back to the covenant, to the truth, and well, they don't want to hear that, but... He feels duped, and he says, "I'm not going to speak no longer in the name of the Lord." And yet, that fire burns within; it wells up inside, and he can't contain it. It's gotta, you know.
Well, and I have to think, brother, that you know your own community. You know, you mentioned your balance between monastic and friar, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. you know that has to play out somewhat in your spirituality. And
oh, very much so. Yeah. I think it's. You know, in our own life, we talk about kind of the pillars of contemplation, community life, and right. then compassionate service. But for me, I think we have a very Eucharistic spirituality, which the church inherently
which makes
does.
You better.
Right. but St. Norbert, you know, is the Apostle of Blessed Sacrament, sure. is what he was called. He was a champion of adoration and things even before sure. they were popular
right.
Kind of normative practices in the church. But for me, that encounter, that daily encounter in the morning with Christ and the Eucharist, and realizing that somehow we're participating in this heavenly banquet. You're kind of glimpsing the, you know, the right. eschaton, the right. end of time. You know, you're kind of tasting the kingdom of God in a certain sense, in this more mystical way. Really, for me, gives me the inspiration and strength that then when you go out in a world that right. seems so broken and so confused, to say that God is present here
right.
and how do we uncover that and be a beacon of hope and show people that there is more
right.
than what we see. And I think that really is what the mission of CCHD is and how it accomplishes it. There's that publication, the kind of case study of CCHD yes. successes. It was titled Credible Signs of Hope Alive.
Yeah.
And I think that was a very real thing because, you know, CCHD isn't going to eradicate poverty in the United States, but it can help communities and individuals realize that there is more to what it means to be human
sure.
than kind of a meaningless struggle. And I think that we enflesh that even, you know, we talked about kind of the grant requirements around CCHD that
right.
keep groups in line with kind of some of the moral precepts of the
right,
church.
Right.
But there are other requirements that keep groups... that kind of help guide groups to really realize a real Christian anthropology. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a strong emphasis on subsidiarity and saying, you know, a large segment of your governing board and leadership in your organization need to be made up of people that are living below some poverty measure, mm-hmm. that are engaged in experiencing these communities themselves to develop leadership, to help communities respond to their own issues because we believe that kind of the generative act of contributing to your community and society so inherent to what it means to be a human person. And so there's a number of these other aspects to the grant requirements that really help guide organizations not only to be in line with Catholic moral thought,
sure.
but also understand kind of the full complexity of what it is to be a human
person. Yeah, and if you look at the church's documents, you know, when it talks about human development, there are four aspects of that. The spiritual, the material, the moral, and the intellectual. And I think one of the problems with, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, about the 70s and some of the problems that happened with regard to peace and justice, I think are some of the same problems that happened in liberation theology.
Sure, exactly, yeah.
The church has an authentic understanding of those things, but it's those four elements all have to be addressed at the same time.
Harmonize.
Yeah. So when you only focus on one,
right,
when you only focus on the material, well, you're going to wind up in ideology somewhere,
yeah,
whether it's Marxism or consumerism or whatever it is. If you only focus on the intellectual, then you become an elite. You become a, you know, but it, so the church wants us to focus on all four. And so when we look at the human person in the spiritual, material, intellectual, and moral aspects, that's what we want CCHG to do. So when we're looking for groups to grant and fund, we want them to care about all four of those, not just the one. They may have an emphasis on one or the other, but they have to care about all four. And if they don't, then they're going to lose their way. And, you know, the church has been reminding us of that throughout her social doctrine, that we have to care about all four of them at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, I live here in Chicago. I live in the back of the yards, and I live with the Precious Blood community, which is actually one of the grant recipients of CCHG. They run something called the Reconciliation Center. It's run by two priests and a nun. And what they do is they conduct circles of reconciliation in a very tough neighborhood. My apartment has, I'm on a first floor apartment in the back of the yards, and it's got the bars on the windows.
Sure.
But they do these circles of reconciliation with young people and with women, because a lot of the, well, in neighborhoods like that, sometimes that's the only parent around.
Sure.
And so they teach them these skills of how to be people of reconciliation so that the violence doesn't escalate. And it was funny, I was taking a walk in the neighborhood Saturday morning, Sunday morning, and I met a man outside my apartment, and he lived in the neighborhood for many, many years, and he asked me if I lived with a priest here, and I said, yeah, I do, and he said, I got to tell you, they have done so much he said, you look around, and this neighborhood looks bad, but he said, trust me, it was a lot worse.
Sure.
Before they got here.
Wow.
He said the violence is down. It's still around, but it's a lot less. You know, the drug stuff is lessening. They're having an impact. They're impacting people's lives. But they're focusing on all four aspects of the person.
Sure.
They're not just looking at the one, and that's the key to this.
So I think, you know, and we've only got about 7 minutes. We want to talk about the campaign.
Yeah.
But I do want to, we can't be afraid of what the spiritual, I mean, this is what I always think of Mother Teresa, who said, you know, we're not, don't call us social workers, because we're ministering to Christ,
right,
in the lives of the people we touch. This confidence that comes in knowing that it's the work of God. And it's God working through us,
yeah,
right, through the institution, and
right,
an institution that is imbued with the very life of Christ.
Yeah.
And in essence, as you said, we're Our Lady, the Blessed Virgin,
yeah,
Mary, is our model, in the sense that we open our lives in trust, you know, but we have to be attentive, listening, obedient, and trust that incarnation happens, and the Lord is able to give himself through us to others.
Right. Yes, and... you know, I reflect a lot on Mary and the Annunciation. You know, to be that young and to be asked to do, from a human point of view, you know, she receives this message from God that she's going to be the son of, she's going to be the mother of Jesus. She's not married yet. Okay. Now, how does she leave that room and explain to people what she's about to do?
Sure.
Joseph didn't even understand it. He needed a special revelation. Okay. That took an incredible amount of faith. And I think to myself, when I was looking for a return to social justice work, and it became evident that Chicago was the place I was going to be, there was some fear there, I've been to the city. I went to Loyola for graduate school. I mean, I know the city, but it's a new place.
Sure.
It's stepping out of a place I've been comfortable with for 10 years. And you know, God calls us to the uncomfortable things.
Always, huh?
Always. It's never, I mean, in your own ministry, you know that as a priest. Sure. You probably never thought you'd be here at St. Sands.
Exactly. Or on the radio.
For this long, that's right. Yeah. You never thought you'd ever have to learn Spanish and minister to a different people. I mean, God always calls us to these uncomfortable things. And social doctrine is an uncomfortable place.
Sure.
It puts us on the margins. But Pope Francis reminds us that that's where we're called to be, because that's where Jesus was born.
Yeah, and this idea of vigilance, you both mentioned that. Being very vigilant, because it's the political stuff is so woven into this that it becomes so, I hate to say this, we've just got a couple of minutes, but Jude or Brother Graham, maybe talk a little bit about the campaign, because that's coming up in November.
Yeah, so the collection will be the weekend before Thanksgiving, November 21st and 22nd, and so throughout the Archdiocese, the collection will be taken. We encourage people to give to it, and we encourage people to know, go to our website to see where the funds are going here locally. If you'd like me or Brother Graham or anybody from our office to come to talk about it at your parish, we'd be happy to sit down with a group of people to do that. Tonight is actually our grant awards at St. Eulalia's this evening. So, but we're happy to reach out and talk about the campaign and
what's the website? Important.
Chicago, www.chicagopeaceandjustice.org. Okay. And that's where we are. So you'll see a pull down for CCHD. You can see the annual report or you can call me at the office or send me an email, jhunts@archchicago.org. 312-534-5383 is my number, and I'll be happy to come out, meet with a group, and share the work that we do.
Very good, very good. Well, listen, we are out of time, and I want to thank you both, Jude Hunts and Brother Graham Golden, and we'll keep everybody attuned to this.
Sure, so great.
Thank you very much
thank
for being
you
with
so
us
much.
Today, and everybody have a wonderful weekend. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Ciao.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.